This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 843, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Well, how the times have changed. Looking back, it seems so clear now. Everything you wanted in your life, everything is certain. Try and understand. Put a checklist on your wall. I am not what you think I should be. But you're making amends for your circle of friends, and you're trying to fit me to their mold.
Hey, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 843. I'm Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with my co-host and pal, fellow Jamoke, Connor Kilpatrick.
You're my co-host.
I'm your co-host.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it?
That's as far as I'm willing to go.
Wow. Right, we're a minute into this. He's drawn a line in the sand. You know,
hey,
what, Josh, Connor?
You? Yeah,
your looks are becoming a problem.
Oh, I know. I know.
Oh, I need a haircut like you wouldn't believe. We are iFanboy, and every week one of us picks the book that they like the best from their stack of comics. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about the book. We talk about other books. When I say books here, I'm talking about comic book issues, by the way, just in case that's not clear.
It's like industry jargon.
Somebody's been listening for years and like, why do they say books? They're comics. It's like people in the movie business. They call them shows. They're working on a show.
Right.
Or if you're in the Comic-Con business, you're talking about shows. It's just it's jargon. We were previously insiders.
Sure.
We were once somewhat inside. We knew guys and girls. There's a patron pick. That's where we talk about a book that you guys make us read. Sometimes we've already read it, so it wasn't like a big deal. It was fine, but sometimes it's 60 pages. We answer listener mail if we have time. That's a fun one, where somebody asks a question, we make some stuff up, and then hopefully make each other laugh and possibly even share something illuminating. There are spoilers. That's when we talk about plot points in books that you may or may not have read. Some people do not like to have their experience sullied in such a way. So this is the point where I tell you, listen, if this book is listed, game on. Fair play.
Yep.
Safety's off.
Yep.
You know it. You had the pick this week, Connor.
I did. It was a big week. Relatively big, not huge. But I had a good number of books. And there was a lot of books that were like very good. You know, like books I was really looking forward to. Like, that was very good, but was it great? Probably not. So at the end of the day, I finished my stack and I didn't have a huge front runner. I didn't have one that jumped out at me and said, I'm the pick of the week. There was a lot of books I really enjoyed.
I don't know what I would have picked. I didn't even think about it, but you're right.
It was by no means a bad week. It was just like a lot of 4-star books instead of 5-star books. But the other day I picked Daredevil 650, or number 2, written by Chip Zdarsky, with art by Marco Cecchetto and colors by Matthew Wilson. And a lot of guest artists came on, because this is the big 650 issue. And what I liked about this, I mean, look, we've been enjoying Chip's and Marco, well, for the most part, Marco, run on Daredevil for a while. There's been a couple of downs, but it's been years, and it's been a very good run. It feels like, you know, Daredevil is a character you come on. You don't just come on to do like 10 issues.
Wait, say that again. Daredevil is a character you what?
Is a book you don't come on to.
Jeez,
there's children listening to this show, Josh. As a writer, you don't just join the Daredevil team to do a 10 issue run. You do like a years and years long story. I mean, Chip's been doing this for years. Brubaker did it for years. Bendis did it for years. And what I liked about this is that it introduced the time honored comic book trope of everything you thought you knew was wrong. You know, there's a character that comes in here. It's Matt's old law school buddy, Goldie. And Goldie reveals himself to be a supervillain who has been orchestrating from the background many of the bad things that have happened to Matt's life over the years in the various comic books.
Now, this sounds like something that you hate.
No, I mean, it's a time-honored tradition, you know? It's like, as long as it's not done badly, it's all about execution, and, you know.
Sure. I have, for some reason, no recollection of the last issue. So when this started off, I was like, have we been talking to Goldie? Who basically, in the first page, I was like, that's John Constantine, by the way. Like, 100% that's John Constantine. Was he introduced in the last issue? I couldn't remember.
Yeah, he was there, and you know, the cliffhanger in the last issue was that the train with Kirsten blew up on it as Matt was running to tell her he loved her.
Right.
The problem being that, everyone had their mind wiped about who Daredevil is, right? So she doesn't know he's Daredevil anymore. So that was a big cliffhanger. It was boom. You know, he's running to the train station, boom, it blows up, and Goldie was the one who blew it up. And so here we go back and, you know, all the way back to law school with Matt and Foggy and Elektra. And, you know, Goldie has these sort of visions. He sees angel's wings and devil horns on Matt Murdock and realizes that this is a special person. He's got to be like a disciple and help to, you know, mold his life in various ways. And so we get a very long, and this is like, digitally, this is 50 pages, but there's a lot of double page spreads. So I don't know how long it was in print, but not a history of Daredevil, but a long going through various points. And he's showing how he got involved. And then mostly shown through these one page pinups from various Daredevil artists over the years. So that, we had Alex Maleev and Paul Azaceta and Phil Noto and Chris Somney, Klaus Janson stepping in to represent the Miller Janson years, Mike Hawthorne, John Romita Jr. So we have a lot of, you know, a nice little sort of recap of Daredevil's life through these one pages.
That was one of the really fun things about the issues is when it started, most of them aren't signed except for Janson, who put a big old name on it. So I was like, wait, who's this? Oh, okay, right. You know, like just sort of, and then like I got to Chris Somney and I was like, well, that's Chris Somney. Daredevil's smiling.
It was just, great. It was really fun. You know, in an anniversary issue, you should be, in a big one like this, you should be looking back on the character's life and do, if you're not going to do one of those, like, well, they don't really do them anymore, but they used to do like short stories featuring these creators, but now everything's for the trade, so this can't interrupt the main flow. So instead of that, they incorporate that into the main story, and it was nice. It was nice to see all those artists back on Daredevil for 1 minute.
I feel like, did anybody do that before Bendis? I think Bendis was the one where I first noticed, like, he'd do a special issue, and then he would get all of his friends, which were, you know, like, there's a stable. You know, there was folks, and he'd get them all to do a page, you know, and now that's become, like, a thing.
Yeah, like, a page in the story itself. That was relatively a 2000s thing when trades became the thing to do. It was a fun issue. It revealed things about Daredevil. At the end, you find out Kirsten isn't dead. The train was empty, basically, when it blew up, and Matt tells her, I love you. And she's like, well, that's weird because I don't know you. And he's like, oh, shit, right. She doesn't know I'm Daredevil. And but then he realizes he's got to let her go because he has to go off and marry Elektra. Because that's Matt's love life is a problem.
Matt's a problem.
Oh.
It's integral to Matt Murdock is that he's always dealing with his faith. And some people have leaned more into it than others.
Mm-hmm.
But I always find it really interesting because it is so at odds with every other superhero
mainstream
book. There's no other characters I can think who are constantly struggling with their Catholicism. And this sort of like Catholic, the you know, classic Catholic guilt is sort of writ on the page of this guy. and he's dressed as a devil. Like, the symbolism is just insane. I'm not sure when, like, has he always been a Catholic? I feel like he wouldn't have done this stuff in the 60s necessarily. I know,
but it wouldn't have been so overt, but that was always part of the character.
You know, and like, to have him talking about the nature of God and how he's talking to him and what it is, and it's just, it's kind of brave, you know, like, to put this in a story like this, and they really sort of stuck with it over time. There's nothing like that in comics, so it always sort of stands out.
Mm-hmm.
I found, if I understand Goldie's power correctly, to be quite interesting, is that he's kind of like a butterfly effect person. It's just that he can control it.
Yep.
So, like, he bumps into a guy, and then that starts off a chain of event that makes the train blow up. And I was like,
yeah, it's a very good description of his power. Yeah, he's a butterfly effect.
That's got to be a tough thing to write.
He's a directed butterfly effect. Like, he can...
Right.
He keeps his hands clean, right? He's so far removed from the final result that would never suspect him, but he can direct it.
Mm-hmm. So the last, what is it, four or five pages of this are cover galleries. I'm making air quotes. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a entry-level Photoshop of little tiny thumbnails of all the covers throughout the pages against a gray background. And I was like, that is... You've got great designers there. You can do better than this.
Yeah. I mean, they've been doing that with all these big issues for Marvel. I mean, it's kind of fun to look at them as sort of like a mosaic to see how, like, logos change and things. But for the most part, you really can't see. It's too small.
But I just feel like, I was like, there's got to be a more interesting way to do this visually. Like, it's just a little, like, it's so slapdash. It's like somebody was like, we got to do this. And they did it, like, in their afternoon and kind of, like, it's not.
We also should mention there was a little backup story from Ann Nesenti, who was a big-time Daredevil writer in
the
80s.
She was a Daredevil writer when I first read Daredevil, yeah.
Yeah, and Chip Zdarsky on art. And I didn't quite get that one, that story.
No, I didn't either. You're right. I didn't at all. From the very first page, lady's putting up her laundry, Matt falls from the sky after there's all these crashes. I like the way that those sound effects were done. And then the last thing is, like, he hits, like, a sheet and leaves, like, a body stain on it. But I was like, he's not that bloody. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Well, they covered him up with a sheet.
Oh, is it? Either way. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's, like, because it's transparent or translucent. You can kind of see him through there. And, it didn't quite.
These women hide him, you know, they hide him in the pigeon coop on the roof. Because all New York City buildings have pigeon coops on the roof.
Yeah, sure.
And that was fine, but then it was like, then there was a whole thing with a gun and...
A severed hand.
that was kind of funny, was that they keep this hand frozen, and then whenever they need to... I'm remembering the details now, because there was a lot of books this week. Whenever they need to...
Plant
someone. Dead Connor is the name of the guy whose hand was cut off.
It's Dead Connor?
Yeah. How many people can they have Dead Connor do?
Yeah.
And so they take his hand and they put his prints on the gun. They need to exonerate someone else for a crime. And that was funny. But, like, overall, I don't think it really coalesced into a short story.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fine.
Yeah.
That bit was funny. And then there was a one-page Chris Giroux mini Marvel thing.
Those Ann Nesenti books, I remember being a kid, I was 11, you know, and I thought, well, I'll try Daredevil. I've heard of that. We'll see what it's like. And I remember I didn't understand it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really felt like a different kind of comic book. But I also remember that John Romita Jr. was the artist on those. And, like, that stuck with me. I kind of remembered, you know, what that looked like. He was also on Thor around that time, too. So he was one of the first guys who I recognized his name.
Right. It was a fun anniversary issue. We got to see a lot of great Daredevil artists come back. We had a giant retcon happen. And it was fun. It was fun. As long as the execution's good and it works within the context of the story being told, I have no problem with that kind of thing. It's a very Matt Murdock thing to have somebody fucking up his life from behind the scenes.
Do you think when they call somebody to see if they want to do Daredevil for art and color and stuff, they're like, before we get started with this, how are you with rain at night? So they have to do like a test rain at night thing. Because some of these pages after the art gallery bit are rain at night. I was like, this looks awesome. You know, and it's Chiquetto, Scott Hanna on inks, and Matt Wilson on colors, and it's really great. But I thought you gotta have people on how to do that. Like, that's got to be the thing. How are you at water towers and rain at night?
We talk a lot about these books. We tend to talk a lot about story, but Chiquetto is really Chiquetto and Matt Wilson together. I don't know what the breakdown is. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. No one else has pages that look like Chiquetto's pages with these sort of full colored backgrounds with like the splotches of color on the page. And I don't know who's doing that because Matt Wilson doesn't do that in any other book either. So I don't know if it's mm-hmm. Chiquetto doing it and then Matt Wilson coming in and coloring it. But no other books look like Marco Chiquetto books. He really goes all out in some of these pages with things exploding. And, you know, the thing where you would think, I'm sure this is digital, but in physical art where you put some like paint on a brush and you flick the brush to get that effect of,
sure.
you know, the stippling, his pages always look like that. And they look great.
I think that there's a lot of digital sort of 3D modeling stuff going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that it is produced and finished, it's not bad. Because it can be really bad when you see that. It's inorganic. It doesn't look lived in. It looks cold. But mm-hmm. the combination of all the stuff. I mean, it's inks. It's weird that it would, you know, because most of the guys don't use inks anymore. Actually, no. So you have inks. Must have been somebody who did inks.
No, inks. Scott Hanna just inked John Romita Jr. Everybody else.
That makes sense. Yeah. So Chiquetto. That makes more sense. But either way, like, they're collaborating together really well to build something. It's funny because I remember Chiquetto, first time I saw him, Punisher by Greg Rucka.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I wasn't sure I liked it yet. And then over time, it's really grown on me. It reminds me of Giuseppe Gammancoli. Different style, but like when I first saw it, I was like, I'm not sure about this. But over time, you know, it crystallizes into something that you sort of see what it is they're doing. And it was new. I didn't look like anybody else. You know?
I really like it. I think he's one of my favorite,
me too.
Favorite artists working right now. The pages just are full of this interesting detail and texture
to them.
I think
it's perfect. Like this is a visual style that, you know, defines Daredevil right now.
Right. You wouldn't have him do like Mary Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a different vibe.
Yeah. But it was the same thing I mentioned, like, Gammancoli, like the first time I saw him was on Hellblazer, and it's great. And then he went and he did a bunch of amazing Spider-Man issues. So you just never know.
True. So a book that was also in the running for Pick of the Week was Do a Powerbomb number 3 from Danny Warren Johnson, Image Comics. The reason why is because we said this before, but man, there's just nobody who draws dynamism in comics the way that Danny Warren Johnson does. And this is the issue where all the fighting starts. So it was really on display here. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the story of a wrestler whose mother was a famous wrestler. The mother was killed in the ring a while ago, and this wrestler woman was approached by a demon who said, come wrestle in my demon world, and if you win the tournament, you can have your mother back. But it's a tag team tournament, so she needed a partner, and they end up choosing the guy who killed the mother. That's a source of tension, but in the last issue, in issue 2, we found out two things. One, the guy who killed the mother was her husband. It was an accident, obviously. He didn't murder her. But the daughter doesn't know that. He was secretly wrestling with a mask on, so she doesn't know it was him. And two, we found out that the demon, in a twist right out of Galaxy Quest, doesn't know that wrestling is fake. So they've got to actually fight these people in the ring. It's not fake wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So issue 3 here is the tournament has begun. Are you still reading this?
Kind of. I got to say, I don't care about the story at all. And I don't mean it like it's not good. I just don't care. It's I'm not super interested. So I more like flick through it to look at it. And I'm like, that is one amazing orangutan.
Yeah.
That is a great punch. Like, it's gorgeous. It's one of those things, like, I'll read what he does, but the pro wrestling story, it's not very interesting to me for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, it's not really pro wrestling stories.
Yeah, I know.
These people are actually fighting now. It's a fighting tournament that trying to win. It's all very sad because, like, everyone in the tournament is trying to bring someone back. So, you know, there's a point where their first opponents are these two giant orangutan wrestlers, and our heroes end up winning, and the orangutans have a moment where they're like, I'm really sorry I failed. We won't get our sister back. And I think it's incredibly compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big wrestling guy, though I was in the 80s. And if it was a straight-up story about pro wrestlers, I might even still enjoy it. I watched a couple of wrestling shows. I watched Heels, and I watched the Young Rock show. But ultimately, it's just about the people and what they're trying to achieve, which is to get their loved one back, and these are the obstacles in the way. I'm just flowing through this book and seeing panel after panel of just incredibly, incredibly well-done actions. Like, no one's drawing like this.
Yeah, no, there's a couple that stand out here. So it's page 19, the big orangutan is punching forward through, and you know that you have the sound effects drawn in mm-hmm. You know, as words with the things that it had. That page is, it's a magnificent page. He's going to sell that page for $1,200 if it's and then a couple of pages later, it's super simple, but page 23 is basically like a backflip in the air as the crowd looks on.
Oh, that's my favorite page.
Yeah, I mean, like,
because of all the things, you know, all the things, the face of the referee, all the crowd,
the ape at the bottom, the you know, the it's all there. It's all very simple. Like, this is the kind of thing that's, this to me looks like if you used to see, I mean, they might still exist, but like beautiful sports photography.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see, like, you know, like a, like a black and white photo of a boxing match, or, you know, like a wrestling match, and you know, like, look how it's framed, and I mean, it is, it, the whole thing is framed, but it's around the audience in the middle, and everything circles around that. And there's
it's a circular framing device. Yeah, between the foreground audience and the sound effect. Yeah,
and the two hands and the other wrestler, and yeah, you, like you just mentioned the ref, and I hadn't even seen that. And then you sort of look down and you see the ape, you know. It's just, it's a superlative composition.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's sort of what I'm getting at is, like, if you just literally flip through this and don't read the words, you can still see what's special about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can follow it too, you know, it, you know, to at least to a certain extent.
It's an interesting tone of the match. It's incredibly silly with incredibly heartfelt. Like, every tag team has a finishing move, and there's one team that's called the Pizza Men, and their finishing move is the New York Slice. And so when they're doing it, there's a giant pizza slice drawn over them, like, just to represent what they're doing. Like, it's silly, but also really sad. I encourage you, Josh, to read it, because it's not about the wrestling.
I don't mean it in that sense. Like, I mean, it's not like I'm like, wrestling, I don't care about that. That's not the point. I just, this story hadn't grabbed me so far.
Yeah, I think it's very good.
That's fine.
I had a thought this week. I was looking at my books on my app. When I had Batman, Superman, World's Finest number 6 next to Nightwing number 95 and next to DC versus Vampires All Out War number 2. And I thought to myself, wow, Dan DiDio really failed. Because his whole thing was to get rid of Dick Grayson. And we had two comics with Dick Grayson on the cover and a third where he's the villain. We're going to talk about Batman, Superman, World's Finest number 6, number 1. I mean, first, I was really excited for this, obviously, because this is, you know, in the last arc, Dick Grayson was lost to time. And so this was going to be the issue where they go rescue him. And I thought, this is going to be awesome. And it was fine. And partially because Travis Moore, who's an artist I really like, did the art on it instead of the regular artist in this book, whose name escapes me at the very moment.
Wasn't Dan Mora, was it? Was it Dan Mora?
Yeah, Dan Mora.
Oh, okay.
It looked fine. Travis Moore used to draw Nightwing. He's sort of like the, I guess he's the Dick Grayson guy now. I don't think the colors worked for him particularly here. It sort of made the art a little bit flat.
It was fine. I think it gave it a, I don't want to say timeless, but maybe a retro kind of look. What I really like about this book is that if you listen to the show for any amount of time, you will know that Connor and I barely remember what it is that we read last week or what happened for the most part. A lot of times it will snap back in as we start reading it or talking about it or whatever, but the details are always kind of fuzzy because we've read literally tens of thousands of comic books at this point.
And also there's a lot going on in our daily lives.
True, but like a nonstop fire hose of relatively repetitive comic books for the last 1,000 years. And what I like about this book is that I feel no real compulsion to find out why they are here. I'll either figure it out or I won't, and it doesn't matter. It's like 60s, like Silver Age comics. Like, he's mm-hmm. in the past at a circus. And I didn't have to worry about it because I know this book isn't going to make me think about that part. It's just going to tell this story.
Right.
In the mythical Corto Maltese.
So Dick Grayson's happens. Yeah, back in 92, and he's joined up with a circus. He found a circus to join up because he's basically alone, you know, stuck in time. And so he's an aerialist, so he's joined the circus as an alien, which he can keep his costume on. His costume must just smell terrible.
No, it's got
when's the last time he washed it?
Bat deodorizes.
He also doesn't need to keep the mask on at that point. Like, might as well take the mask off.
That's true.
Anyway, he's joined as an aerialist, and now that, you know, there's a murder happening in the circus, and these guys have ended up dead, and he doesn't know what's going on. He left a time travel note for Batman and Superman. He, you know, come rescue me on a rock, which they found.
Back to the Future 3.
Exactly. So then, in the middle of his aerial maneuvers, Batman shows up, you know, and they become a little aerials team, and we flash back to find out they got the note, and they go back in time. And then Superman's there as a strong man. It was a very fun Silver Age adventure where there wasn't too much. You don't worry about the details of how this all happened too much. It's just fun.
I actually really enjoyed this because of that. It was just like, oh, I don't need to know anything. When Batman shows up, I was like, it didn't matter. Like, right. I was like, rad. Of course he would be able to do the acrobatic stuff with him. It's just like it's an obvious connection. And then you cut and Superman's there with his super nipples and. You know, and like, it's funny is that they kind of don't look out of place among the circus folk.
Right, and their suits. Well, the thing is, like, right, that was the whole...
Yeah.
Superman's outfit was originally based on the Circus Strongman.
Right, exactly. So it totally works in that way. My question, however, is this. I have always been under the impression that the cape is part of the cowl, and now what I'm learning is that it is a detachable thing.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes it's detachable.
Sometimes, exactly. You know, and besides that, it's just like a little murder mystery, like an old-timey comic. You know, like, it was you all along, and like... Anybody who's read one of these stories, you're like, yeah, of course it's him. You know, the guy was crying about his line in the beginning. By the way, my favorite tiny old-timey detail in this is that the money that was stolen from the First Bank of San Diego is still in bags that say the First Bank of San Diego. It's just, that's criminology 101. You change the bag out.
Exactly.
This is definitely the money stolen from the First Bank of San Diego. Or they made a massive withdrawal and the bank only had sacks, branded sacks.
That's how I like to get my money out. I don't know how you do it, but I always ask for branded sacks.
You just think there's like a manager of the bank in 1891 who's like, we have to put in an order for more branded burlap sacks. Like, sure thing, boss. And like they had to like bring them in by rail from Baltimore because those are the people who make branded burlap sacks.
Should we make these locally? No. Baltimore is the capital of branded sacks. That's where they make them. There's just a whole factory making sacks.
And then, like, I know what you're saying. Like, the art isn't necessarily as dynamic, but I think it actually really fit this story. It gave me that flatness, I think, gave me more of the Silver Age feel.
You mentioned Chris Samnee drawing a smiling Daredevil. This is the book where Batman smiles.
Yeah.
You know, this is the book where they get to have a little bit of fun. Like, at the end, the last shot is literally like the end of a 80s sitcom. Like, Robin's got his arms around Batman and Superman. They're all smiling. It's just like, you know, these can be fun too.
I checked back at the beginning. I was like, is this still Mark Waid? Not because it didn't seem like him, but just because he's cut so much. He can do so many different things that I was like, is this a different person? Because it's a different story than what we've been reading. And
right.
It's great. If this is what it is, just like adventures through time or whatever it is, like, do it.
And it's just a one-shot story.
Yep.
It was fun.
Yeah,
it
I
was
really
fun.
Enjoyed that. So, do you know what I've been doing this week?
Tell us, Josh.
I read DC versus Vampires 1-8 in my non-comic reading time.
Wow, look at you!
I know I'm behind on books now, but I was like, I really do want to catch up on this because I've been enjoying it so much, and I just tore through them all. Like, I couldn't get enough. I wasn't quite done when it was time to read new comics, and I finished them first. I know.
Oh, I know, because I was trying to get the show ready, and you were like, I'm not done yet. And I was like, you read all those other books.
I know. Well, there's a lot going on. There's a lot. If I told everybody out there how much is going on, you'd be like, that, you're full of shit. And I'd be like, no, dude, it's real.
So DC versus Vampires All at War number 2, this is the side miniseries. And it's not a short one. It's a 6-issue mini.
Yeah, and there's stuff that happens. Like, the there's a backup story at the end of it. I was like, this seems significant. Like, it really seems significant.
We originally talked about this book as, you know, trying to recapture the glory of Deceased, and it's getting there, and it must be successful enough because, you know, the thing about Deceased was it started having these side minis that filled in the rest of the world, and so now we're getting this too. And one thing I really like about this book is it's basically black and white. They just... Mm-hmm. They color the blood in, and I think it's anything that's red, but everything else is just grayscale.
Yeah, and I really like that in the last issue, and I like to hear, but it did present some sort of confusing storytelling stuff, especially with like the big fight in the tunnels. I was losing track of who was who a little bit.
Mm.
You know, I think it's an impressive experiment. I'm glad they did it, but some of the characters, like, I don't recognize Azrael on sight. You know, it takes a little extra effort, and there's Wonder Woman, but then there's another woman.
Mary Marvel is the main hero.
Yep. She was fine when her hood was up, and when it went down, and just the pages are super dynamic. So it doesn't establish where you are as much. It's very kinetic and action-packed and everything, but I did have a little trouble following it because of that.
Yeah, and I told her, I mean, at one point, like, Catman shows up, and I was like, who is that? Because they're black and white, and sometimes the costumes are very similar.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are fun adventures of these side characters trying to fight the vampires. And this is Constantine and Azrael.
Oh, it's Talia. That's the one who kind of looks like she could have been Wonder Woman in the story.
Right.
You know, same build, dark hair, long hair. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So early on in DC versus Vampires, somebody said something about John Jones not being susceptible because of his Martian physiology. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, every other character is fair game to become a vampire. Like magic folks,
right.
Wonder Woman, because they even say, like, she's like, you're very tough. And she's like, I'm made of clay. And I was like, well, can clay become a vampire? How is Captain Marvel's a vampire? At one point, Wonder Woman turns Superman and bites. And I was like, how'd she do that? I guess it's magic.
Yeah, magic. He can't.
Either way, the point is, like, I started thinking about it. And then I was like, Josh, let it go. And I did. Like, you know, like, would I, let me ask you this way. So when you start doing that, like, it doesn't make sense. All right. Do you want a story where you have to explain why everybody else can't be a vampire? Or do you just want everybody to be a vampire? And that is an easy choice.
Right.
Yeah. Make everybody into a vampire where necessary. Don't worry about it. And I was like, okay, that works. That's fine with me.
And the backup story, as you mentioned, is pretty important. It's the origin of how Dick Grayson became the first vampire king who started this whole mess in the first place. So,
because I kept in the regular series, I was like, maybe they'll explain how this happened. Because I didn't start reading it until, might have been this. No, it was one of the other minis or one shots or whatever. It was the one with Damien.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that one, there's a reveal that Dick Grayson is the vampire. But I think we'd already known that in the main series. But I was kind of waiting for, like, well, when does this happen? And it didn't happen in anything. And I'm reading this story, and there's a backup, and, like, she calls him in, and he has to go visit the vampires. And I was like, what is this doing here?
Yeah, you think this would be a backup in the main book, at least.
Yep.
So, yeah, so in Bloodhaven, his sister, which I don't still love, but whatever.
The mayor.
The mayor of Bloodhaven says she needs his help mediating between two vampire factions, which never goes right. Whenever that you're called in to be the mediator between two vampire factions.
I mean, let's give them credit for this story. Written by Emma Vaselli. I'm not sure who that is. Gets a call. He's in bed with his cute dog. Sister calls him up. You got to go meet with the vampires. And he's like, sure, costume or no. No costume. They go out at night. They're across from a scary graveyard. But it turns out that they're actually in a really kitschy waffle place across the street from the graveyard. You go in. Super cute anime vampire girl,
mm-hmm.
you know, leads him to a downstairs dungeon, which then becomes a gothic vampire nest. And they're all cool about it. You know, they're chatting. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's batshit, and like in a way that I can really get behind right now. And I think as I was reading all those issues, it isn't the same as Deceased, but it does have the same thing. It goes, all right, you know all these characters, so we don't have to do the work for that. We're going to completely change the situation in which they are in. And there's something that's really fun about comic books. I can't think of a lot of other things that can do that.
Oh, for sure. You can build on decades of familiarity and not have to worry about backstory right. And things. Yeah.
Like, no one takes the cast of ER and puts them in an old-timey Western where there's...
Although, I would watch that.
I would totally watch that, but it doesn't happen because it would cost too much money. So, like, you don't do it with movies. You don't do it, you know, it doesn't even work in novels that well because you don't have the visual. Like, comics is a place where you can do this thing. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, they're extremely flexible, and they're not these characters are not brittle. You know, they can survive these.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah. And you know, you can read it on its surface as a story, but if you're like a longtime fan and reader, and you know all the details and are seeing the Easter eggs and stuff, it's quite fulfilling. You know, and because you're off to the side, things can have consequences, and there's a sense of danger, and there's a in the main series, the ongoing stuff, it's going to be fine, one way or another, even if it's fine 5 years from now. But in these, you don't. So it's what you want from the characters, but with that sense of uncertainty that makes drama fun.
So, Josh, I know you're not reading this book, but we had a sequel this week, Jimmy's Little Bastards, number one, which is the sequel to Jimmy's Bastards, which was a series from Garth Ennis and Russ Braun from Aftershock, which is basically... Garth Ennis is taking the piss out of James Bond. And so this is the sequel. And this is like prime satirical Garth Ennis. This is both of these series. This issue was terrific. The last miniseries was terrific. And this is the fallout. The first miniseries was all about the fact that, well, I'm just going to call him James Bond, had all these illegitimate kids, like hundreds of them, because of all the women he was sleeping with. And they all teamed up to kill him because they were fed up with him. Those Jimmy's bastards. And so this one... The fallout from that, a lot of stuff happened I won't even get into, but he's been emotionally broken. So now he's retired. He's gotten fat. He's watching reality TV with a sweater on, and his old partner shows up. He's like, you got to get back into the game because we have this problem to deal with that involves his family. And there's a whole bit here, you know, about the British colonialism in Africa. Like, it's, and it's doing prime, here are the problems with British society and our view of ourselves. And it's what you want. And he really doesn't like Boris Johnson. Really.
I mean, this is unsurprising.
In fact, there's a note in the beginning of the book. Author's note. As the reader will no doubt guess, this issue was written long before the inhuman bucket of excrement depicted herein resigned from power.
The pitch that you describe sounds like a Kyle Starks book.
You would enjoy both of these.
I know. I know. I'm like, I got to read this. I got to remember that it's a thing and then read
this. This is only a 3-issue minis, but you're not going to want to read this. Well, I guess you could read this without the...
I don't want to do it that way.
Jimmy's Bastards was also not too long, but you can pick it up. It's all from Aftershock. It's all available online. But cool. It's not straight up Garth Ennis like doing The Lion and the Eagle. It's it's funny, satirical
Garth Ennis. I like that. I like that Garth Ennis an awful lot. And usually what happens with it is that it seems one way, and then when you sort of get to the end, all of a sudden you sort of find the weight that's been there all along.
Yeah, and also Russ Braun is amazing. He's one of my favorite Instagram accounts to follow. He does these daily sketches that are just incredible. Sometimes Garth is saddled with less than stellar artists who are not up to his writing, but Russ Braun is his equal and more.
I feel like in the past few years that hasn't been as much of a problem.
Not as much. It was a problem more like 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair. Trying to remember what happened in Nightwing number 95.
Well, I want to talk about Nightwing 95 only because A, Bruno Redondo's back after a couple issues, and B, the cliffhanger here is that Blockbuster finds out that Nightwing is Dick Grayson.
I was thinking about the little bit of this earlier that I wanted to bring up, and I was like, it's not in this book. What book is it in? And it's...
I just hope it doesn't become a thing, because, you know, I'm
yeah.
I guess I'm one of the last people in comics who thinks the secret identities is a good thing, because it seems to be going on out. But like, I hope it's not a thing where he gets his identity revealed, because that's a whole ball of worms. That's worse than Superman.
I think the secret identities are fun.
Yeah.
I think that really lends to the, and like the fact that you have to be like, I mean, of course it's Dick Grayson. How would you not know that's Dick Grayson?
Right.
You know, like if George Clooney showed up with like an inch of fabric around his eyes, you'd be like, that's George Clooney. But either way, the thing that got me is that Blockbuster punched him so hard that his mask popped off his eyes.
Yeah.
In the air. And I was like, because I went back. I was like, wait, where'd his mask go? And I was like, well, they showed it. It was like, boop. Like, that doesn't happen. But whatever.
That's how strong he is.
I go, well, then why isn't he dead?
True. True.
That's a good punch.
Yeah, I just hope it's not a thing. That's all.
Nope. I think that's absolutely fair. I like that one of the themes of this book, and this is a Tom Taylor thing now, like, you know, is that the friends, the teams, like the family, they all come together, like a bunch of people show up to help Dick, and I like a lot that like it's all Titans folks, and for some reason Duke is still a thing, but Batman's just in there, hey,
yeah.
Just one of the team.
He's not even the focus of the layout. No. He's like to the side.
In fact, you don't see him at first.
Yeah.
I also don't know what Robin I'm looking at half the time.
That's Tim.
I know, but at first it's not entirely obvious. Tim's hair goes down, I guess, and Damien's hair goes up. That's all I get.
Yeah, Tim's got Gen Z hair now, so that's how you can tell.
Right. Tim's.
And Damien's just not around.
Tim's our age. No, Tim's like late 30s.
Let's not do this conversation again.
I'm sorry.
We don't need to derail us and me yelling at you about how wrong you are. What is True Cult, number one?
I didn't know, but I read it anyway, and it's weird. I'm going to have a hard time putting my finger on it, but very basically, there is a guy who has worked at a burger place, Burger Lord, his whole life. He went and got a job there, and he's been there for 15 years, and he's just one of those guys who works at a burger joint forever. And to him, he's like, I kind of got away from it, but he's not really all that upset about it, you know? The manager there is the same person has been too. He's been there all along. And he is there so often, he plans a robbery at the strip mall next to the burger place where he works, that when he goes out for like his, not smoke break, but he goes outside for his break. And the idea is that he goes into each store with a mask on, except for the reggae store, for whatever reason, and he robs them. And it's like one after another, he's timed it out to the second. First store, and it says what he gets from each store. Number one, $20. And he's like, there's no cash here. Number two, $469 from the nail place. He goes to 8 different stores along the strip mall, robs them all, comes back to the job, goes back inside, you know, and goes back to work. And he's like, it's perfect, you know, and then there's a twist, you know, that happens. But there's no supernatural as far as I can tell so far.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of word balloons and explication and stuff, but it's actually pretty well written. The dialogue's pretty good. The art does its job. It's not spectacular, but that's sort of, you know, beginner folks.
That's from IDW, right?
Yes, IDW. I kind of liked it. At the end, I was like, all right, there's something here. It's not everything else. There wasn't a twist. It's just this guy who works at a burger place, and there's a robbery and some weird folks. Not super weird, though. Like, it was pretty straightforward. And I'm interested to see what they do with it, but I thought it was fun. True cult, but the U's are V's. So right. It'd be Trevu Cavolt.
Yes, and it's a K instead of a C.
Yep, that's true.
It's, so, it's the Latin spelling.
That sort of relates to the thing that happens right at the end of the book. I don't really know what that's going to be. But it was fun. I liked it.
I wanted to mention Hulk 8. I wanted to mention it because Daniel Warren Johnson did the scripting with Donny Cates this time, which was interesting.
Tell you what, that guy could write Hulk. That guy should do a Hulk book all on his own. He should do a Beta Ray Bill, but Hulk. Imagine.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yep.
And I wonder if he wrote the Beta Ray Bill scenes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was wondering. Because I was like, whoa, that's interesting. And then I'm reading it, and the Beta Ray Bill shows up. I was like, oh, I wonder if that's Daniel Warren Johnson.
It just made me wonder, you know, yeah, about everything. The one thing I can give to this book is that it's big, and it's weird, and it is nonstop.
Yeah.
And if you lean into that as being the strength of the thing and don't worry so much about the details of the plot, because if you can follow the details of this plot, God bless you. You know,
I was wondering if this was going to be like, you know, Marvel used to do, and this was a long time ago, and all of our references are from like the heyday of the show, because we just, that's where our brains imprinted. But Marvel used to bring on a co-writer, and then the co-writer would take over. And so I was like, oh, I wonder, yeah, if Daniel Warren Johnson is taking over this book. But then I saw the next issue was back to Donny Cates and Ryan Otley. So I think they just brought him in to do Beta Ray Bill.
I mean, knowing what little I do of Donny Cates, like, that dude likes to collaborate with people and bring, mm-hmm, them in. So I imagine he was having a conversation. He's like, hey, why don't you do this one with me? You know?
Right.
That feels like a thing that he would do.
Which I think is cool.
Yeah, it's totally cool. It makes it fun. And it's not like, I don't know, like, I feel like it's done because, quote, this would be cool. Which I think is Donny Cates' thing, by the way. Hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Mm-hmm. Usually it is. And I like that approach. That's what works out for him.
Right.
And that's why his career feels a little different than everybody else. It's just like, I think this would be awesome. You know, and it is.
So those are the books we're going to talk about at patreon.com/ifanboy. The patrons vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, by overwhelming margin, they voted for Batman, One Bad Day, The Riddler, number one, by Tom King, Mitch Gerrits, and Clayton Cowles. This is the first of several. I mean, if you're reading DC books at all, you've seen all the ads. But this is the first of several one-shots featuring Batman's Rogues Gallery on their worst day.
Monthly. You get one a month.
Yeah. You know, you've got some good names on there, but this is really the powerhouse team, and I was surprised they led off with that. Because
I mean, I think in this, you start with that, and you set
it's probably only downhill from there.
G. Willow Wilson, Jamie McKenna.
No, I mean, there's good people. There's totally good people.
I know, but yeah, you're kind of right.
It's like starting with Alan Moore and then going to everybody else.
Tom Taylor and Ivan Reese on the last one. So you're sort of your power ones right there. Oh, Jerry Duggan and Mateo Scalera.
Yeah, those totally good people. Anyway.
Yeah, no, totally good, but I know what you're saying. What'd you think?
I'm of two minds on this book.
That makes sense.
But let's put a pin in that for a second and talk about the fact that we got killed again in this book.
Did we?
Yeah.
I saw something at one point and I was like, wait, did that? And then I didn't go back. I thought.
We were one of the guards. We were each one of the guards that was guarding Riddler in Arkham and then got killed.
What's he trying to say?
I don't know, but he spelled my name wrong again.
I think he listened to the show back in the days where he knows what that means.
Anyway, there was a whole list of names. It was like they were just rattling off the guards' names, and it was, mm-hmm, Josh, Connor, Ron, Bob, Daryl. And I was like, again? All right, so we'll put that aside. I really liked this book as a out of continuity one-shot story. Like, taken in that context, I really liked it.
I agree completely.
I'm trying to figure out what it is. I know what they want it to be. So the whole thing was, this is very consciously trying to do the killing joke for each of these characters. However, very rarely do you... The killing joke happened organically. It wasn't the killing joke wasn't meant to be what it became. It just was a story, right, that Alan Moore wanted to do. It became a big thing. It became... it was even out of continuity originally, and it became part of continuity. It was an organic thing that happened. It's harder to manufacture that. It's harder for you to say, I'm going to set out to write a classic, as opposed to just writing something and have it become a classic. So right off the bat, you're already like, well, they're trying to do this. It's like, it would be like if they said, we're going to do a whole series of Dark Knight Returns. You know, it's like, well, you can't ape that.
That was before Watchmen. Kind of the same deal, you know, and most of those have been forgettable, and some of them, you know.
Right, but my point is, like, it's hard. Once you say we're going to do a series of killing jokes for these other characters, it's like, well, you've now set yourself up to fail.
It's like trying to create a viral video. Like, that's not how it works.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, I mean, they reference the events of Killing Joke in here.
Sure.
A. B, Tom King already likes to do his books in Alan Moore style, so that's B. And then C, it's the same ending. So that was very strange. But taking that aside, it was very well done, and I enjoyed reading it.
I mean, Tom King is a very original writer who incorporates a lot of homage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's in his wheelhouse, certainly. And it's funny because it's in Alan Moore style, but it's not in Alan Moore Killing Joke style, if that follows. It's Alan Moore Watchmen style, which has been sort of changed into Tom King style. If you're going to steal from the best.
There's a lot of nine-panel grids in Killing Joke.
You know, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I can kind of picture it now. Imagine Brian Bolland actually doing more interiors. It just never happened.
No.
I don't know anything about the Riddler. I mean, like, I know what he is. I know his deal. He showed up and stuff before, but he's never been a character. Like, I understand Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. I even understand Joker to a certain extent because, you know, that's the fact. He's chaos or he's whatever, but maybe there's a story where it doesn't matter. You know, I understand Selina Kyle. I never got the Riddler, and I think that this was a really good... I don't want to say explanation because it's like an option more than it is anything else. And again, if you say this is a one-time... one shot single story, it's great in that way, you know, like this as a way that this villain is born is incredibly well thought out and intelligent and compelling. Like the fact that he's got this as a kid, I mean, the backstory is no, you know, I was gonna say it was my favorite part, but it isn't. That stuff all really works well together. So the backstory is that he is, I mean, that's fucked up. Is any of this canon? Like, he is the son
No, that's the whole point. Like, the Killing Joke was establishing a canon for a character that didn't have any.
Right. So none of this is stuff that happened before?
No, none of this is all new.
Do you know the Riddler's origin? Like, do you have an idea about what that is in your head?
No.
Okay, so that's interesting. He's Edward Nygma.
DC has no sense of him either. He's a different character completely in every appearance, which is kind of okay in my book.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a riddle. This explanation, I really liked. It's such a well thought out thing. He's got this headmaster of a school, and he goes to see a lady of the night, and she gets pregnant, and he takes it. And he's going to raise the son in his own, but the headmaster's fucked up, you know, because of all this stuff going on. But the kid's a genius. Mm-hmm. But his dad never, you know, makes him feel like he's failing if he's not perfect. So he has this teacher who, you know, gives a test and Riddler prepares for the test and does the whole thing exactly as he's supposed to. And then at the end of the test is a riddle that you're supposed to solve. And he just doesn't know how to think that way. And so he loses points on a test because it's not extra credit and he cannot get over it. And you've got this teacher who's being a great teacher. It's Robin Williams, the teacher. You know, like, I need you to be able to think of that. You have so much potential. I'm just trying to help you get there. And, you know, not Nygma. I can't think of what his name is. But he can't get over it. And he hates him for it.
Right.
And he, you know, he breaks. And he becomes this other character. And then you go into the main story. I mean, and this is the thing that Tom King does that I don't think anybody does as well, including Alan Moore, is that, like, I would have the hardest time writing mysteries or writing the Riddler. And he just builds a thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's great at construction, so that's like perfect for the Riddler. Yeah,
but you know, like, to me, like, the hard part is, like, I would never think of the riddles. I would never think of the, and I don't mean to compare, like, I'm not saying, oh, I couldn't do this, so I can't see what it is. I'm just saying I find it really impressive. And then, you know, the thing here is that the Riddler always leaves a riddle. And in this one, he just kills some dude.
Yep.
On purpose and doesn't leave a riddle, just to fuck with Batman and to prove that that's not a thing that he has to do, and that's how he can beat him. And I mean, it was 60-some pages, And, you know, like, it was riveting. I was into it. And Mitch Gerads gets better every single time he does a book. It is crazy to me. You know, it's not like the Mr. Miracle was bad. It was fantastic. But this, I was just like, man, it's like his style keeps evolving. There was a time where, and he uses a lot of photo reference. He photo references himself, but it doesn't even look like it anymore.
Like, well, no, I mean, the actors are very clearly the actors in the book.
Yeah, but it does have a way of feeling organic in a way that a lot of photos, like a lot of stuff like that, doesn't to me.
Right.
Like, it feels like a drawing that's clearly overlaid on a thing, but that's what he does, and it's not a secret to the process. But I just feel like, and it suited the story, he has a style, but it's a little malleable for where it needs to be. I really liked how the Riddler was drawn in present day, the blacker
as Michael Stipe.
He's
got the look of the Riddler from the second half of the animated series, where they changed him from the guy in the suit to they made him like super skinny, bald, and they gave him these dark eye mm-hmm. things.
Yeah,
and I saw this on his Instagram. He talked about his process. He took that Riddler and they combined it with Michael Stipe to make this Riddler. So I mean, it was fine.
See, I don't know anything about that process, so it helped.
You know, he's revealed to be like the smartest guy in Gotham. He knows Batman's identity. He, much like Daredevil, he claims to have orchestrated so many things against Batman since he knows who he is. He claims he sneaks in at night and watches him sleep. Realistically, it'd be the daytime because he just doesn't sleep at night.
It's creepy, though. Made him super creepy and formidable. Those scenes were scary.
And then he basically gets the city in a vice. Like, he says, I live in this hotel. If you come at me, I'm going to kill everyone you love. And so that everyone from the mob to the cops to everyone leaves him alone because they're terrified of him. So that's where the ending comes in, where Batman just shows up and murders him. So I was like, well, what is this book?
It was interesting, though, because, you know, our thing about Batman doesn't kill. And he was literally left with no choice. And it's slightly ambiguous what happens. I mean,
well, same thing with Killing Joke. But the beginning of the book is where he murders the guy, where he, you know, the guy's walking out and it's all from his point of view. And then there's four black panels after the Riddler shoots him to indicate his change into the void. And so the same thing happens here, where we see the Riddler's point of view of picking his hat out, puts it on, he looks in the mirror, Batman standing behind him, and then there's four black panels. So it's the same construction. He's dead. It's like the ending of Sopranos.
I think it'll be really interesting. I kind of hope that the folks doing it didn't see each other's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I would like to see what other kinds of interpretations of this concept there are.
Yep.
And I would hazard a guess that this will be one of the best of them. But I'm guessing there's also going to be at least one real good surprise in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's great people on all of these books.
But this is where Tom King shines. Like this setup, this formula. Short, you know, he can do short stories, and I don't know. I it's so impressive, you know, that this level of planning and exactitude.
I mean, the thing is, like, you wouldn't have thought they could bring the Killing Joke into continuity, right? Because it's the same ending where Batman is strangling Joker, and the whole thing with the light turns off, and that's the, if you watched in the beginning of the book, that's the metaphor for madness and death. And then, but they did, they brought it into continuity. And so here you think it's not even possible because this Riddler totally like blows up the entire idea of Gotham City. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't know what they're planning for these. These aren't Black Label. They don't say they're out of continuity.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you can just enjoy them for this, I think, really incredible, and you think really incredible Riddler story. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't know what their plan is for these characters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it. Yeah, I wasn't. If you had sort of told me about it, I don't think I'd care.
Right.
But given the team, you know, given the stuff, it's just, I feel like it's impossible to not at least be impressed by it.
So, are you going to read the other ones? Are you sticking with it?
Maybe not all of them,
mm-hmm.
but I keep myself open to the possibility that there could be some really cool stuff coming up. So. We'll check them out as...
And there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But it's only once a month.
Right. It's but it's eight of them. Eight total, seven more. So what is the ratings on this? Ratings on Batman One Bad Day, The Riddler number one.
4.5.
I think that's fair. 4.5.
Yeah.
Out of 5. Yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting to see what comes of this, if anything. I don't need anything to come of it, but I'm just, you know, always conscious of what they're trying to do at DC because it seems to not know what they're doing. So
I don't think they know what's going to happen next week. Genuinely, I'm not even being facetious. I mean, obviously, they have to plan out because 3 month cycle. Either way, probably would have made this my pick of the week. Probably.
Not being able to divorce my brain from the questions, if they said this is just a fun, out of continuity thriller story, it would have been pick of the week. But I just can't turn my brain off to wondering what they're doing with this. And that clouded it a little bit for me. But that's not the book's fault. It's my own fault.
I think the fact that you even think that there's a plan is adorable. Like, what they're going to do with it is going to be an improvisation at some point later by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I always kind of feel it is. I feel like this stuff all moves too quickly.
And the Riddler is dead, though.
Plans.
He's dead at the end of this book.
You don't know that.
He is dead.
Black panels, you are assuming that.
Because that's the construction of the book. He's dead. The guy who was shot in the beginning is dead. He's dead.
But if the Killing Joke is in continuity, he weren't dead either. If that stuff happened, it doesn't matter.
He also says that he planned the Killing Joke for the Joker. And it's like, okay, all right. All right.
I will tell you, I don't like it when anyone brings up the Killing Joke in continuity ever.
Well, then every time you see the Oracle in the wheelchair.
I understand.
That's bringing it up.
I know it is. I think that this is wrong, but I feel like that story is so horrible. I don't mean it's a bad story. I just mean what happens in that story is so terrible that it doesn't mesh very well with my conception of what I want the DC universe to be. Right. It's a level of trauma and brutality that if it happens, you know, ambiguously or to characters you don't know or whatever, but it's so, you know, like how do you, I mean, like this, the thing about the book is like, how do you let the Joker walk around after that?
Right.
And they have to. And so it just doesn't mesh correctly.
But you don't feel that way about Identity Crisis.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, but you don't see Dr. Light all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he's not a thing. You see Joker all the time.
Right.
And for some reason, like, you know, the Joker's killed billions of people in the book and he's terrible all the time. But for some reason, that one is so up close and personal and it's a character that all these people care about. And it's right. Just, and you know, none of what I'm talking about is like a logical thing. It's just a feeling that I have.
Sure. It's all emotional. That's all this is. And that's the beauty of make your own continuity.
And you know, it's the same thing with like Jason Todd. Like, it's just so, the Crowbar. Like, I will never, what a fucked up thing for me to read when I was 11. Like, I can picture those three panels of the Crowbar coming down, and it disturbs me to this day.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, there's something to be said. Like, there's kind of going too far. But also, that's their job at the same time. I don't know. It's very complicated to me.
I'd like to go ahead and apologize to the email writers this week.
Okay, that's fair.
It just happens. It happens sometimes. We had a lot of us to talk about. But before we get going, we do have to talk about the patron powers. Again, as the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy voted to add the book to the rundown, thanks to the patrons. But we also like to give out a power to a patron who gives it the $5 or higher level. And this week's power goes to Michael Mavity. And Michael's power is that it's a blessing and a curse power in my book. Michael can place an object anywhere where he knows it's going to be stepped on or knocked over. Like right now, Josh, you're podcasting at your desk. You know, you've got your whole setup going.
As far as you know.
Right. Well, I mean, you could be you could be in the Bahamas for all I know, but I'm imagining you at a desk. He could sneak up behind you and with his power place like your water cup where he knows you're going to turn and whack it with your hand. Not
he
realizing
must be
it's
here
there.
A lot.
So he can do that to anyone at any time that he can see. However, the tragic irony of it is that he's constantly doing it to himself without realizing it. So he's constantly knocking into things, knocking remote controls off the couch. And
does it usually stay minor, or does it start like a mousetrap Rube Goldberg?
I mean, if he really wants to try, he can create a giant domino effect situation. But mostly it's just like, you know, I put this water cup on the floor, and of course it's right where I turned and stepped, you know.
The people in his circle spend a lot of money on replacement keyboards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And remote controls.
Can I just say, by the way, I've never heard the name Mavity, and I really like saying it.
It's a good name, Michael Mavity.
It's great. It rhymes with gravity. Gravity's a great word.
He's like a comic book character.
It's alliterative.
He's a Stan Lee creation.
Yeah, it's true.
So So thanks, Michael, for being a patron. Be judicious in your power. Just realize that this also happens to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where Michael became a patron, and thanks for doing so.
You can also get in this position yourself. You may have noticed we've cut down on how many patron powers we do because we're running low on patrons. We want to stretch this
thing out. We're reaching the end. We've finally, after years and years. And there's people still on the way. There's a lot of people where's my power? We have a whole list of people we're doing who upgraded, because when you upgrade, we don't get a notification, so you don't always get in the list right away. But we've added that. Also, if you think that you have not been given a power and you are owed one, please email us at contact@fanboy.com and we'll look into it, because we don't want to miss anybody. We like doing the powers. So if we've missed you somehow, which is entirely possible, because again, sometimes we have to actually look through all the email alerts to find out people who have upgraded, let us know. Email us in.
Don't worry about that. I don't want to bother and whatever.
Yeah, no, totally do it. We want to give you the power. That's your reward.
You can get yourself over to patreon.com/ifanboy, and at the $5 higher level, of course, you will eventually end up with your power. But the point, obviously, is to if you're able to support the show, you listen to the show all the time, it's important to you, you want to help us continue making it, then that's what you would do. There is a great community of folks who are part of that. There's the Discord and the Facebook groups. There are stretch goals, which have achieved things in the past. All of our video shows, content's been uploaded to YouTube at this point. We are doing 3 or 4 shows a month now, extra from these shows. And we'll give you updates on those stretch goals soon. Remember all that stuff that I told you about that was happening in the background of my life? I consider this my fault, by the way. So if you're like, ugh, they keep saying it, totally me. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com. You can find 12 designs on t-shirts and more, including our newest design, the Gosh shirt, good old superheroes. Ifanboy.com/support. There is a direct donation link via PayPal if you wanted to do that. And just for the record, now is a great time. If you feel like, man, I've always wanted to be part of this, but I've never had a reason. Now is a great time to help support.
That would be a helpful time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly. And then ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you will find affiliate links for the Books Blowed books, for the music on the show, for the pick of the week, and anywhere else that that's appropriate. And also, there is bookshop.org, which helps local bookstores out. You'll find those links on the website where appropriate as well. That allows you to order books from independent bookstores throughout the... Is it just U.S. or is it the world? Is it?
I think it's just U.S. I don't know. I'd be talking out of my ass if I said just U.S., but I have no idea.
That's fine. I know it is in the U.S. I know at the very least it's the U.S., but, you know, local bookstores are great. You can either have them sort of pick which ones you want, or you can patronize a very specific bookstore if that is your want. So we will stick those in there when we can. We're very happy to have something to do with that. And I think that's it. We're not going to do an audience question because we talked a lot.
Yeah, we did. We got to skip that. Sorry. If you did want to write in, contact@fanboy.com is the place to do it. You can write in for this show. You can write in for the Media Explode show. If it's for Media Explode, put Media Explode in the subject line. But we love doing those emails. But there was a lot to discuss this week.
Yeah.
And we apologize. It hasn't happened in a while.
Well,
I feel like
the books needed talking about.
It happens.
And I found a way to shoehorn in the 8 issues of DC versus Vampires.
If there's another series you think Josh should binge, write in to contact@fanboy.com.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the extra shows. We always have extra shows in addition to this show. This past month, we've had our special edition review of Green Lantern: Be Aware of My Power, the animated movie. We just released, just behind this show in the feed, our newest Media Explode, which we did the top 5 TV deaths. It was a very fun and emotional discussion, and we thought we would run short. We did not run short, but that was fun. And then next week, or this coming Thursday, you'll have the Booksplode review of Hulk Future Imperfect. Josh and I sat down, it's already recorded, and talked about Future Imperfect, the capper or the opening to Peter David's Maestro saga. And we had a lot of fun discussing that book. So you can look for that this coming week.
You know what's great about these sort of older books that we choose from that for those shows is that I think we've gotten very adept at not really having read a thing, but looking at the people involved and going, I bet this is going to be awesome. And more often than not, it is. And I really like that, because the other thing is, like, if somebody's been talking about a comic book story for 30 or 40 years and they're still talking about it, it's probably something pretty great about that.
Right. At least something interesting about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's our August Booksplode. That means September is a Talksplode, and then the Booksplodes return in October. And for October's Booksplode, we're going to be doing Cosmic Odyssey. So if you haven't read that or haven't read it in a while and you want to read along with us in October, it's going to be Cosmic Odyssey from DC.
It's somewhat possible there could be a bit of a Talksplode hiatus. I'm going to try We'll see. I'm working on it.
Anyway, Cosmic Odyssey from DC, and it's Jim Starlin and Mike Mignola. So,
yeah.
Wow. And John Workman. We should never forget.
You know what? I feel like we talked about doing that years ago, and we talked about it briefly on one of the shows or whatever. But I feel like now, this version of Josh is really going to get a lot out of it.
Yeah, that's, I'm excited. I haven't read it in a long time. I've read it a lot as a kid, but I haven't read it in a long time, so I'm looking forward to it.
You can find all of our shows over at ifanboy.com, as well as all the writing that ourselves and our staff have done over the years, kind of wrapped up a while back, but it's still there, and a lot of it is still quite valid and fun. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by following at ifanboy on Twitter, at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can follow Con and I individually at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page over at youtube.com/ifanboy. You can subscribe to that. The only thing that's going to be going up on there, you know, for the foreseeable future is going to be we put the audio show up there. So if you prefer to listen to this on your computer on YouTube, you can do that as well. It'll save your place. That's all. I'm done with my part.
And finally, if you like the show, consider leaving a review or a star rating wherever it is you get your podcast. It helps people find the show. It helps those services bubble the show up and make it more discoverable. It's all a game, and we're just trying to play it. And that's how people do it. So thank you for doing that. It takes a minute. And not just for this show. Any podcast you listen to, it's a great way to help a show, help support a show you enjoy, is to help that be discoverable by writing a review or leaving a star rating. So thank you for that. Even better, that's word of mouth. Tell your friends and your family that you enjoy the show. We do appreciate that. You're our team on the ground, our unpaid interns. We appreciate it. And so that's it, Josh.
No, we also don't provide college credit. That is,
we provide no college credit.
Right. In fact, I would... I mean, this is just professional advice, but I would probably keep this off your resume entirely. But what do I know?
When they call us for your references, we will be very confused.
Right. I mean, I will straight up be like, I don't know who that person is. Or at the very best, like, yeah, I kind of recognize that name.
Right.
There's that.
Yeah. We had a lot of people over the years. Sorry.
Yep. I remember.
Not the best
surprising,
references.
Surprising amount of them, though.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you're going to be good as an accountant.
And I don't think it's fair that you put that on us.
Exactly. It's not my fault.
I mean, the fact is, I don't really know anything about your character whatsoever. What,
right.
The image that you're putting up on social media or in your in your comments about comic books, this is just not enough to go on. I'm sorry.
Right. Is this person qualified to be a regional sales manager? I don't know. I just know what they think about Spider-Man.
And even that's dubious. Do I want them to get the job? Do I want them to be happy? Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Do I want them to be good accountants? If that is their muse, if actuarial tables, that's insurance, not accountancy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, you know what? You're not qualified to answer that question either.
And that's why I don't put us on in the resume.
Exactly.
We don't even know the difference between accounting and actuarialism. Is that a word?
You know who does?
Who?
Billionaires, and I think it's time to step up. There's got to be some very, I don't know for sure, but just the law of averages, there's got to be some very wealthy people listening to this right now in your ears. And listen, your concept of very wealthy and mine might be different. Because wealthy people don't ever think they're wealthy unless they're like
they're comfortable.
Wealthy. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Again, don't put us on your resume. Until then, I'm Connor.
I know, Josh. We're serious about that resume thing. When you try to make decisions, when you try to water this thing down, look up once in a while, you see it's not so clear. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending,
which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.